Here we are, New Music 88. This was actually recorded 6 months ago. It's the last show we did in London, and I just wanted to get it out to you. I've got another show coming up next week with Alex the Cougar, longtime listener. He's calling in via Skype. But this was, I wanted to get this out to you. This is the last one we did in London, so enjoy. It's a short one. It's only half a show because I had some technical problems, but I think you'll like it.
That's it. New Music 88. This is the last London show. I got Dr. Spence and DJ Dan in the house.
Yes, please.
So we're going to start off with some music, and we got a long show.
So we got tons of good stuff.
So you might want to keep this on your iPod for a while.
Settle in.
Is it treble down on the speaker? Is that how you like it? It's actually the bass is down. I feel like it's a lot. It's bass heavy. It sounds muddy. Well, bass does sound like. I don't know what it is.
But on the. What's it sound like on the. Does the audio file sound different from the speaker? From the monitor?
Generally.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe.
I'm not sure why. I think it's the speakers.
Yeah.
They're made for like classical music.
Yeah.
So I don't think it handles like strong bass well.
Yeah.
Sweet.
That was smooth.
Nice pick, Spence.
Like a five-blade shave.
Glad you liked it.
Yeah. I didn't really know much about Erykah Badu until I checked out her prolific Wikipedia page.
She has a really good live album.
Really?
I don't know how many she has, but there's one that we've got that I love. I really like it a lot.
She, the thing that shocked me most about her life was that she gave birth to Andre 3000's child. This is like a superhuman, a super musical human. My God.
She's the prototype.
Yeah. Man. She's she's really deeply entrenched in a very cool musical career, as far as I can tell. I mean, we don't even need to go into it.
She dated Common for
a while. Dated Common, and she's and, been through
D'Angelo. Is that what you said?
Well, she her first track was a duet with D'Angelo.
Yeah,
it's a great way to start out. Man, she's a hip lady.
Yeah, all up in the New York scene.
I was caught off by her political message with that line, underwater stovetop blue plate
special
scientists get your skills out.
What's a blue plate?
No idea.
Well, there's the blue plate
The blue plate special.
What's that? Is that like a round table pizza?
No, was it a diner thing? Does that come from Kmart?
Oh,
is it a blue plate special from Kmart? When the, I think
that's right.
I'll have to double check. But
was it the plate special? Was it because it had the little blue circles up in the aisles that were having the sale?
Maybe. Well, like let me double check.
They marked their certain things with the blue plate.
That might be it, actually. But
yeah,
underwater stovetop blue plate?
Here we go. Blue plate special is a term used in the United States by restaurants, particularly but not only diners and cafes. It refers to a specially low-priced meal, usually chart-changing daily, and typically consists of meat and three vegetables, presented on a single plate, often a divided plate, rather than more elegantly on separate dishes. Yeah, so it's actually quite general. It isn't just Kmart.
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, Erica.
Wikipedia.
I didn't know Kmart did food.
No, they do. They do. They have a great cafe. You can get a decent dog there.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it like on one of those 7-Eleven rollers that's just
it is. It is. Dude, I had the worst job in the world for a while where I had to travel to every Kmart in Northern California to inspect their calendar aisle. And so I went to every single Kmart in Northern California and took a picture of myself outside of it and had their hot dog and, you know, just sort of hung out at Kmart after Kmart after Kmart.
That sounds depressing.
It was really twisted. It got to that point where you wake up in the hotel and you don't know where you are or when you are. And like all day long, you spend it in places that look identical. It was really strange.
Wow, man. What was this dream job?
I was working for a calendar company.
Yeah.
And they sold calendars, and that was one of their biggest clients. And so I had to go there and check out how their calendars were doing.
Well, that's cool.
It was a strange week. Really strange week. It's a bit like Groundhog Day.
Well, Dan, give me one of your picks.
I got a double whammy coming at you.
Okay.
You're going to do two in a row.
I'd like to do two in a row, if I may be so bold.
All right, that's cool.
Because I've had a lot of week of nostalgia, being that like this is the last London podcast show of Notes Underground, and it's been like summer's been kicking in, and it gets you thinking about the good old days, and like so I started listening to some of the old CDs that I've forgotten about. One of them was Jawbreaker, and I was like, oh great, I'm gonna play a Jawbreaker track on the show. And then I started thinking, well, I wonder if any of our listeners know who Jawbreaker is. And you guys haven't heard of Jawbreaker, it turns out, have you?
Negative.
Yeah. Let me just a little bit of backtracking on it. Jawbreaker was a wonderful punk band that was, I think, based out of New York and really made the scene in sort of the early 90s. And Blake Schwarzenbach was the lead singer. He eventually
East Bay.
Well, they had a huge East Bay following. I think they had East Bay elements in their band, but they're from New York, I believe. Someone might correct me if I'm wrong, but they were a huge influence on mine in high school. And Blake Schwarzenbach eventually left and did Debts to Brazil, which did quite well. And now he's back after a long hiatus away, where he's basically just been doing music criticism and writing. And he's joined up with another legend of punk rock, this guy Aaron Cometbus. Now, Aaron Cometbus was also fundamental in the forming of East Bay punk rock, in that he was good friends with Billy Joe from Green Day, and was in Billy Joe's first band, called Pinhead Gunpowder. And Billy Joe and this guy have since reformed to do Pinhead Gunpowder shows. But Aaron Cometbus is one of the seminal punk figures of East Bay Rock. So he's the drummer, Aaron Cometbus, and he's a punk rocker who does some writing. And Blake Schwarzenbach is a writer who does some punk rocking as the singer. And together they form this new band called Thorns of Life, which haven't released any albums yet, but they've done a few shows starting at in New York, and then some series of small shows at 924 Gilman, of course, like the epicenter of it all in East Bay. And so we've stripped the audio from some of the video that's been recorded of these shows, and we have that here to play. But first, I want to play Boxcar, which is a job, like one of the best Jawbreaker tracks, followed by Thorns of Life. And I think you'll see a lot of the similarities. You'll see how they've grown, and it's I think it's a good duo to play.
Nice one. Did some research, Dan.
I love these guys.
Here we go.
What's the score? Got a friend, her name is Boxcar. Cigarettes and beer and elves. Her hair was blue, now it's green. Like a mind, she hates the thing. My enemies are all too familiar. They're the ones who used to call me friend. I'm coloring. What's the score?
This is a sing-along, and the chorus is, we tried this in Santa Rosa, and I only gave up half the chorus. So the chorus happens about 75 times in the song, and the chorus is, the volume of the vanity, New York is giving me the creeps. There's two more lines. Like teeth into a baby's knees. Oh baby, 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 please. The volume of the vanity, New York is giving me the creeps, like teeth into a baby's knees. Oh baby, 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 please. Knocked down doors. There is no head to cut off. begin my stand. This is the culture capital, beauty bought and sold. But she and I both know they trade their only souls on a bridge or tunnel toe. For
excellent work on punk rock, Dan.
Takes me back. God damn.
You're kind of old now, eh?
I know.
Yeah, you're old.
I'm wearing a cardigan. I didn't used to do that when I was at 924 Gilman.
What is it about punk rock that makes the youth go nuts? Bailey was like
doing it. Is up. It's pure up. Like, it's pure up. Yeah. You don't get that up from classical music. You know, I don't know any. In fact, I'd really like to ask my grandfather this. He's a big classical music fan. I'd like to, you know, like, does it energize him? I don't think it does. Yeah. From seeing him listen to his favorite classical tracks, he just kind of like sits back and finds a real peace, you know? I don't know anyone that finds that. People get their joy out of punk rock from the up that it brings. It's like a caffeine shot. It's just
totally.
It's wonderful like that.
But it raises an interesting question of like, why should people have like a genre that they like, as opposed to like, depending on their mood, they like anything.
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, but they do. Like, I have genres that I like and others that I don't. But it's weird because maybe when I want to get pumped up, I should throw on my house. And when I want to chill out, I should get on my jazz or my classical. But, like, you don't. You tend to kind of have things that you actually stick to, don't you?
You mean, like, a specific band rather than a whole genre? Is that what you mean?
Or I just mean, like, why don't I put on classical when I want to chill out and punk when I want to...
Oh, instead, your music matches your mood rather than the music driving your mood.
Yeah. Maybe it's both. Maybe it's two-way.
It's a comfort with a certain type of sound, isn't it? It's like mother's milk in a way. Like you experience those emotions with that sound and you'll forever tie them with that. Whereas so like I like to chill out to Calexico and Caliphone and, you know, this sort of like Southwestern sound that they have. Whereas I don't really chill out too much to classical music. I would never choose to chill out to classical music. I would choose Calexico, Caliphone, or Low, or any of those bands, you know, like Iron and Wine or something. But I can't really translate those emotions readily.
Is it because you want the music inherently? Where like music has these, I think like music like sparks like different parts of our brain when we're listening to it. In some cases, like both sides of the brain, front and back. And
there's a book on that I've been dying to read called Your Brain on Music.
I have it and I love it. And but the interesting thing to me is that I think your mood plays a role in terms of how receptive you are to that experience where your whole brain is just firing. And like, I think that's ultimately what we're looking for. We're not looking for the mood. We're looking for like the super you know, brain nodal firing.
The brain firing
and so feeling. We experience these moments when we're in those moods, and so we like look for, so we're like, okay, my brain's gonna fire if I play this kind of music.
How much like
trying, you know, to get you into a mood,
right?
Because it's music's actually not powerful enough, I think, to alter your mood.
Well, no, that's where I was gonna go next. I think it's two-way. I think it could push you over the limit. Like, I've had times when you're kind of like down, and then you're like, maybe I'll throw on my iPod, and you throw it on, and you're like, oh yeah, this is good.
But I think when I want to dance, and I want to dance,
when
Michael Jackson comes on, I'll go. You know what I mean? But no, like, if I'm at work and Michael Jackson goes on, I'm not going to start dancing.
Right. But you've had times when you're in a certain mood, and then you kind of coincidentally, without really intentionally doing it, put on some music, and it changes your mood.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
So maybe you're just in one of those transitional, like, vulnerable states of mind, though.
I think it's two-way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either way, though, we're definitely, you're craving that feeling that comes from it, that sort of brain chemistry feeling that comes from having the right song and the right emotions that it drives.
Yeah.
I never really thought of it. It's kind of like, you know, when you're trying to figure something out and you have that aha moment.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a bit like that. I wonder if we're sort of all sort of searching for that moment when everything.
Actually, I think it's different than that because from what I understand from this book that I've been reading, Your Brain on Music, is that it's actually the fulfillment of your expectation that is so, that gives you that gives you that emotional boost. So it's sort of like the, I think this is going to happen. I think this is going to happen. Yep. And there it happened, you know, and that is actually what.
Interesting.
You know, yeah. Mm. But sometimes it's the opposite, right? It is the opposite. It's that you have these expectations and then the band or the song or the genre fulfills that expectation over and over and over again. And then one time they take a left turn and it's like a joke. It makes you laugh because it's funny because it's not what you expected.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact opposite of what you expected.
That's fascinating because I wonder if people are like really experimental stuff. Are people that get off more on being surprised.
Right, right, right.
You know, because my mom is into jazz and she's always very cautious. She'll give me CDs and she's like, ooh, this is out there. She'll be like, you know, it's going to be like 45 minutes of completely atonal.
There's no groove.
Squeak, you know? And then, but I think she likes it.
Right.
She'll just say.
Because it makes her feel free or.
Yeah. Well, she just says, you don't know what to expect.
Right.
You know, yeah.
It's probably the same people that are into noise. I never understood them too much.
Yeah. I think that's great.
When did your mom get into that though? At what age, do you know?
Pretty young.
Yeah, pretty young.
She listened to jazz growing up.
There's definitely in my head a connection with that. These powerful connections between a genre or style are formed in during the most emotional times of our life, which are when you're a teenager, ultimately, when you're first experiencing love and anger and hate and power and, you know, the capability of fulfilling like what you want to do. And you actually given power, you know, you get a car or whatever and girlfriend and all these things. And I think that's when you build these really incredible connections. I mean, I don't know if I don't think since I was probably in high school, I've formed a powerful connection to a genre or style of music.
No,
at that time, it was definitely punk rock and reggae.
But that's another thing, actually, that is addressed in this book, is that it's also tied to developmental things like with your sexuality and
completely.
Those sort of motivational, it recalls memories and like specific synapses that are going off at a very acute, like emotional, like point in your life, and that music helps to sort of
do they talk about
those synapses?
Definitely. And,
do they talk about the evolutionary reasons at all? Do they speculate at all, like why that would be?
That's such a Spence question. I have no idea.
All I know is I definitely experienced it this morning when I was vacuuming and listening to Gish by Smashing Pumpkins. I was just like, yes!
Oh, that's perfect segue.
Sweet!
Dude, you said
high school rock and roll.
Yeah. Speaking of which.
I've got this. So Smashing Pumpkins is one of my favorite high school bands too. And then I think a few years ago, I found the Silver Sun Pickups and we recorded them live on our show. You can still find access to that. You can definitely still find that show and I can post it again. But they've got a new album coming out now and it sounds great. And I'll play a track from it. It's very Pumpkins-ish, but it's a newer version. So here we go with Silver Sun Pickups. Hot off the press a week before their album releases. So.
waiting.